Shri Aurobindo's book, The Mother, is the essence of the sunlit path. It gives, in brief, all that is necessary for treading on this sunlit path. It tells us about the call, the aspiration that is needed, and the most important thing, the grace that is required. But at the same time, what connects this aspiration from below and the grace from above is what he would call the personal effort. Effort is in fact the bridge between the call and the grace. And of course the book also gives us a bit more in detail about that divine personality under whose grace alone we can walk on the sunlit path. And that supreme divine personality is what he would name as not only the divine mother, but also as the supramental Mahashakti. So in this series of four talks, we shall be covering these four aspects of the sunlit path: the call, the effort, the grace, and the supramental Mahashakti. Today we shall take up the very first aspect of what exactly do we understand by the sunlit path, and what are we to understand by the word, the call. In fact, most of us know, those of us who have read the Synthesis of Yoga, that by the term yoga, what Sri Aurobindo means is a methodized effort towards self-perfection by the expression of the potentialities latent in the being, and a union of the individual with the universal and transcendent existence. If this is the definition of yoga, that is to say, not only a union with the transcendent and the universal divine, but an expression of the potentialities that are there in the individual. This in fact is the full definition of yoga. It is not just one-sided union with the divine, but it is as much a manifestation of the divine on this earth. So if this is the definition, then it is only when the conscious yoga in man becomes, says Sri Aurobindo, like the subconscious yoga in nature, outwardly conterminous with life itself, that we can say in a more perfect and luminous sense, all life is yoga. That is, until and unless life becomes much more conscious of the divine within, and one endeavors to manifest the divine outside, it would be wrong to say all life is yoga. In fact, Sri Aurobindo himself writes strongly about it. He says, yoga must include life and not exclude it, does not mean that we are bound to accept life as it is, with all its stumbling ignorance and misery and the obscure confusion of human will and reason and impulse and instinct which it expresses. Yoga takes the stand that it is only by a change of consciousness that the true basis of life can be discovered. From within outward is indeed the rule. One must go deep and find the soul, the self, the divine reality within us, and only then can life become a true expression of what can be, instead of a blind and always repeated, confused blur of the inadequate and imperfect thing that we are. So you can see, all obviously, in Sri Aurobindo's own time, somebody must have given this loose definition that all life is yoga. And how strongly Sri Aurobindo says that we are not bound to accept life in its stumbling ignorance and misery and obscure confusion. So first of all, let us be clear about this oft misunderstood, misquoted phrase, all life is yoga. So from this clarification and definition, we come to see that yoga is in fact a third stage of human evolution. It comes much later in the evolution of human society. Well, not only human society, even in an individual, yoga does not come very early in one's life. Maybe there are definitely exceptions to it. There are people who are almost born for the yoga. But ordinarily, man goes through or lives in three different levels. The first level is the ordinary life, which is that of an average human consciousness separated from its own true self and from the divine, and led by the common habits of the mind, life and body, which are the laws of the ignorance. As the mother puts it, it is the first of man's being, which is an almost total mixture with all the things from outside, and that there is almost no individualization, that is specialization, which makes you a different being. You are moved, a kind of form which is your physical being is moved by all the common universal forces, vital forces or mental forces which go through your form and put it in motion. So that is the universal being. So this is, most of the humanity is at this level. What are the characteristics of this level? Number one, it is separated from its own true self and from the divine. So what is an ordinary life? This is the definition. That you are not only separated from the divine, but you are separated from your own true self. That is to say, one is a kind of a bazaar, a marketplace for all the influences to come on you and to dictate to you the terms, and you are nobody, no individuality. You are just one of those pegs in the whole machinery. So this is a kind of an ordinary consciousness where we have no individuality at all. Then what happens? At a little higher level, some people manage to crystallize into more or less independent beings, conscious of themselves, having their own qualities, yet still full of the moments of obscurity, unconsciousness, and of the limitations of ordinary life. Well, this is a little higher level, as the mother would call it. That is to say, people are still not conscious of the divine at all. That's far from it. They begin to crystallize some kind of an individuality. That is, they become a little more self-conscious, and yet they're not away from the ignorance. As Mother beautifully describes here, people are occupied with outward things. Even, said, that is the most ordinary, second level is still ordinary, but there's a little difference. But even these people, she says, are occupied with outward things. That means that the consciousness is turned towards external things, instead of being turned inwards in order to find the deeper truth, the divine presence. You are busy with all that you do, with the people around you, the things you see, and then with life, sleeping, eating, talking, working a little, having a little fun also, and then beginning over again, sleeping, eating, etc., etc. And then it begins again. And then what this one has said, what that one has done, what one ought to do, the lesson one ought to learn, the exercise one ought to prepare, and then again, whether one is keeping well, whether one is feeling fit, this is what one usually thinks about. So the first movement is to make all that pass to the background and let one thing come inside and in front of the consciousness as the most important thing. The discovery of the very purpose of existence and life, to learn what one is, why one lives, and what there is behind all this. This is the first step to be interested more in the cause and goal than in the manifestation. That is, the first movement is a withdrawal of the consciousness from this total identification with outward and apparent things, and a kind of inward concentration on what one wants to discover. So this is the very first step towards yoga. That is to say, if the individual from that ordinary consciousness, and we have seen what the mother describes the ordinary consciousness to be, always busy with our outward people, outside responses, with our outer well-being. But the day the individual begins to ask himself that what is there behind all these things? What is there, as the mother calls it, one is interested in the cause than in the manifestation. That is the first, very first sign that you are turning towards yoga. That is, in one place she would say, you begin to get a kind of a divine disgust with the outer world as it is. That is to say, you are no more happy with what you have. with what you are, especially what you are. And then there is one step behind. You want to know who has created all this? What is the reason of my existence? Why am I born? So when these questions begin not only coming into you, but when they start bothering you, those are the first signs of the call to the spiritual life. It is not yet, as one would say, the call of the flute of Shri Krishna, yet it is the turning towards a higher life. So those who come into this call, they normally turn towards a religious life. And this is the second stage or level of religious life, which is a movement of the same ignorant human consciousness turning away from the earth towards the divine. But as yet without knowledge and led by dogmatic tenets and rules of some sect or creed which claims to have found the way out of the bonds of the earth consciousness into some beatific beyond. So religion, all these castes and creeds are the first step of this call of the individual towards a higher spiritual life. So religious life is not the end, it is only the very beginning of a spiritual life. Although most of the religious life gets bogged down by rites and ceremonies and practices, still it is better than that man who doesn't think of the cause. You see now the difference? The ordinary man is one who is completely identified with the manifestation. The man who is turning towards spiritual is one who is turning towards the cause of this manifestation. So that is the second step, is the religious life. And then, even in this religious life, after having a taste of the beyond, this could be in any form. It could be the strong presence in nature, a deity that responds to your prayers, a power that guides the workings of this world. When one begins to have that clear intensity of the heart to come to know that which one began to adore, to unite with that being of adoration, then comes the real call for a spiritual life. This could be the very first cry for the divine. You can see why we say it is the very first cry, because till now in religious life you were more concentrated on getting a response from a deity, one of those goddesses, one of those powers of the Supreme. But in spiritual life, you go beyond this question of the goddesses and the deities and the gods, and there is a direct call to the Supreme Divine Himself. So there is another distinction when we come to spiritual life, that we begin to think of the Supreme Divine more than the manifestations of the divine in the form of different gods and goddesses. So that is the level of spirituality. And here Sri Aurobindo says, the spiritual life proceeds directly by a change of consciousness, a change from the ordinary consciousness, ignorant and separated from its true self and from God, to a greater consciousness in which one finds one's true being and comes first into direct and living contact and then into union with the divine. So this is the third level of life. As an individual can grow from the ordinary into the religious, from the religious into the spiritual, or there is a human mass itself that is stuck up at the ordinary level, there's another chunk that is stuck up at the religious level, and there is those elites who are taken, who have taken to a spiritual life. So this is that the third level. And this level, as you can see, Sri Aurobindo clearly tells us, it is when one's true being comes first into direct and living contact and then into union with the divine. That is to say, when one begins to experience the inner. So you can see the religion is an experience of the outer, the divine in the outer. But with spiritual life, you begin to realize the divine within. So if you want to gauge where we are, perhaps these are things that could help us. Are we looking for the divine outside or within? Well, obviously, once we seek the divine within, once we have a living contact with the divinity within, we shall also see the divine without in all things. But the first gesture is to look for the divine within. That is the starting point of a spiritual life. Well, with this quest, the ancients, especially in India, thought of many different ways, out of which three different paths of yoga have come to us. Well, these paths, as all of you know here by now, either through reading Sri Aurobindo or other Indian literature, these are the paths of knowledge, the path of bhakti, the path of work. And each one could be useful for some people. It is not that everyone is cut out to follow all the three paths. There are some people who are oriented more leaning towards one path, the path of knowledge or devotion or work. And therefore, it is these three paths that have really remained most permanent, most influential in Indian society especially. Well, I would not like to go into the details of this, because what I am interested is the sunlit path. But the essence of these old paths is, each of these paths is based on tapasya, and the aspirants by their own strength of tapasya reach and identify themselves with the divine. For this they go out of existence to find the divine. They themselves go outside life to find him. Now this is where we need to clarify a little bit, because there are again misconceptions in this, that what does it matter which path I take to the divine, as long as that path can identify me with the divine. In fact, each path, knowledge or bhakti or works, each one of them takes you and you have the identification with the divine. So isn't that enough? Why should we take to integral yoga? Why should we take to any other sunlit path? Because if I want to aim at the identification with the divine, aren't the old yogas enough? That's a question we need to clarify. You see here, Mother tells us, two important things. For truly speaking, each one finds only what he wants to find of the divine. What you expect from the divine is what you find in the divine. What you want from the divine is what you meet in the divine. He will have for you the aspect you expect or desire. And his manifestation is always adapted to each one's receptivity and capacity. They may have a real essential contact, but this contact is limited by their own capacity for receiving and approach. And it is only if you are able to go out of all limits that you can meet the total divine as it totally is. Well, you have seen the very first point that the mother makes here is that the old yogis, once they identified themselves with the divine, they do not even find that their identification is incomplete. That is because after the identification, there is no longer the position, for example, of the Lord and the aspirant. At the moment of identification, that relationship disappears. You see, I found this an extraordinary clear answer of why the new yoga. You see, in these old yogas, she says, once the individual, the yogi, identifies himself with the Brahman, either through the path of knowledge or bhakti or work, what happens is, this identification is perfect, she says, but this point is perfect in itself. I don't say it contains everything. I say it is perfect in itself. That is, the identification is perfect, but it is not total. This is what we need to understand. That in the old yogas, there have been many persons who have identified with the divine, who have merged themselves with the divine. But once you merge yourself with the divine, what happens? You lose your individuality. And if you lose your individuality, there is nobody to ask, there is nobody to recognize that if my realization is total or not. So there is this subtle distinction, if you can catch, the distinction between an identification which is perfect and an identification which is total. So, till now, all the old yogas have given us a perfect identification with the divine, but not a total identification. So this is why the new question comes, that do we want the divine in totality or not? So this is, in fact, the mother tells us in one of her conversations that this is precisely the problem which faced Sri Aurobindo here and me in France. Should one limit one's path and reach the goal first and later take up all the rest and begin the work of integral transformation? Or should one go step by step, not leaving anything aside, not eliminating anything on the path, taking in all the possibilities at the same time and progressing at all points at the same time? That is to say, should one retire from life and action until one reaches one's goal, becomes conscious of the supermind and realizes it in oneself? Or should one embrace the entire creation and with this entire creation gradually go forward toward the supermind? So this was the problem that Mother and Sri Aurobindo themselves faced. That should we realize the supermind first, establish it in ourselves, and then open it to the humanity? So for a long time, as she says, the problem came Even in France, when she was there in Paris, and it came to Sri Aurobindo, of course, when he was here. But as she says, before they could even take a conscious decision about that, there was an automatic growth of the ashram. That is to say, after the First World, Second World War, when people started coming in, especially the children started coming in, mother said, we have the answer. That is to say, we have to take the whole humanity together. Sri Aurobindo and the mother, they realized that they cannot have the supramental first for themselves and then open it. So this is how they started this collective yoga. This is how, as you know, they launched on this integral yoga. So now you can see the difference why Sri Aurobindo brought in this integral yoga. Well, in his own words, he says, the one and the only aim we have before us is to bring down the supramental consciousness and the supramental truth into the world. The truth and nothing but the truth is our aim. And if we cannot embody this truth, 100 incarnations do not matter. By this yoga, we not only seek the infinite, but we call upon the infinite to unfold himself in human life. So this is the object, the supermind, and to let the supermind unfold itself in humanity. So this being the very object, you know, once when the mother, in those early 30s, wanted to hasten the advent of the new consciousness, and she prepared a whole new world. And then when she went to Sri Aurobindo, saying that I have prepared a new world for manifesting, Sri Aurobindo said, no, do not bring that world down, because that world is a supramental world. He said, by this we will become very popular. We could even start a new religion very early. But this is not going to solve what we want to do. Because as it says here, we want nothing less than the supramental truth itself. So this is how there was no compromise at any stage. Mother and Sri Aurobindo went out for the total divine experience. So we need to understand that the object of this integral yoga is not, as he himself says, in other words, this yoga takes in all possibilities of approach to the divine, instead of approaching the divine by a single path. There is a sort of movement that could be called spherical, where everything is included. And I think this is a beautiful word for us to remember, spherical approach to the divine. That is the integral approach, spherical, instead of a single linear approach to the divine. Hence, proportionately, the difficulties of this yoga are manifold. And it is only for those, says Sri Aurobindo, it is only for those who have the call, the capacity, the willingness to face everything and every risk, even the risk of failure, and the will to progress towards an entire selflessness, desirelessness and surrender. And once again he writes in one letter, very strong one you can see, one must not enter on this path far vaster and more arduous than most ways of yoga unless one is sure of the psychic call and one's readiness to go through to the end. Now we see for the first time the word psychic call. So the essential thing, the call required for treading upon this sunlit path is the psychic call. It cannot be anything short of it. The very foundation of this yoga being surrender to the Divine Mother, it is the psychic being alone that can recognize the Mother and surrender itself to her. Unless there is this initial recognition of the inner child, the psychic being of the Mother, surrender on all other levels cannot even commence. For the sunlit path is one in which one goes forward in absolute reliance on the Mother, fearing nothing, sorrowing over nothing. I think this is the most crucial point that we should understand. Why? Sri Aurobindo tells us that the call of the sunlit path has got to be essentially a psychic call. It cannot be anything else. For the reasons, obviously, that the psychic being is the child of the Mother. And in this sunlit path, the person who takes charge over our destiny and our growth is the Mother. It is to the Mother that we are supposed to surrender. So who can recognize the Mother? It is only the child who recognizes. Even in the human beings, it's the same thing. The vibration that is there between the child and the Mother, the intimate closeness between the child and the Mother is exactly the same on the level of the psychic being and the Divine Mother. So to this path, if there is only an intellectual curiosity or any kind of a vital attachment, it will not take us too far. The whole journey of the psychic path has to begin with this first spark of recognition, the inner recognition. Like I heard from Champaklal ji, who told us that when, you know, in those very early days, when he saw Sri Aurobindo for the first time, it was in the playground at Dotwa. Sri Aurobindo was standing on the last step of the staircase. He came down and Champaklal ji bowed down, did a Sashtang Pranam for a full 1 hour. And Sri Aurobindo stood there for a full 1 hour. And as he told me, that is because he recognized immediately, instantly, the Divine in Sri Aurobindo. So that's what I would call the recognition of the inner psychic being. If that spark of recognition is not there, that she is the Divine, then the journey is full of doubts and debates. And there could be lots of other influences that could pull you out. So it is not a kind of a reading of the Life Divine or a reading of a book that attracts you to Sri Aurobindo's yoga or the sunlit path. These books and the photographs have to awaken within the individual something. You may not be able to recognize it as psychic or this or that, it doesn't matter. But you must feel that spark, yes, she is divine. And rest of it will follow later. The intellectual knowledge, the bhakti and everything will flow on from that single instance of recognition. Because the essential thing of the sunlit path is the call of the psychic being. And rest is only a matter of development. Now, to take a little more in detail, what is this call? Well, I have here a wonderful description from one of those great yogis of the ashram, Rishabh Janji. And he has given a whole description of what this call means. And I'll read it out and try to explain a little bit. By the call, we do not mean merely an aspiration for the divine or a yearning for the bliss of the unity of life, but a definite call of our whole being. Its unceasing and unflagging invocation to the Supreme to descend into us and manifest His supernal splendor in our life and nature. So the call is not just an aspiration, because an aspiration could be a mental aspiration or an emotional aspiration or that of the body itself. But this aspiration, or what we call, is a whole being. It's a call of the whole being. And a call of the whole being, and he calls it beautifully, unflagging invocation to the Supreme to descend into us. Please see, each word there is a distinction. In the other yogas, in religion, there is a call to ascend, that I may have your grace, O Lord, that I may be protected, O Lord. We may have all these things asking, praying to the Lord. But in this call, which is almost your entire being is uplifted, there you call the divine to descend. You see, even in our simple experience, that when we ask something from the divine, it is not for ourselves that we should ask. I mean, to give you a very practical example, if you want to do something well, even writing an article or making an article in your own factory, it is not because you want to get the name, you want to get the money profit, you want to get fame, you want to get anything out of it. It is you ask the divine that you may make that article in your factory well, as part of His own manifestation of beauty in this world. If that is the attitude, then it becomes a work for the divine. So each time, even if it is a personal asking, let there be this attitude of the descent of one aspect of the divine. That is how our yoga can be a continuous one. It's a call for the closest and completest union, but a constantly creative and revelatory union in our waking state. This call springs from a mystic faith and perception of our inmost being, that the extinction of the individual soul in the unthinkable eternal is not the end of our birth in terrestrial existence, and that there must be a definite purpose, a deeper intention behind the drag and drift of its ambiguous appearances. So what is the second aspect? That it is a mystic faith. This call is also a mystic faith. Faith in what? That this world cannot be what it is. This cannot be the finale, the end of the world. So although I see all the ugliness, all the violence, all the war, all the non-divine things, I have a faith deep within me that this cannot be God's plan for the earth. There must be a descent of the divine at one point of evolution. So it is kind of going against the present situation. So that is called the mystic faith within, and that also adds to that inner call. And this faith, this irresistible belief in the eventual apocalypse in matter, informs the call with a steadfast intensity, and no other spiritual achievement, however high it may be, can fully satisfy those who have once had a glimpse of the unimaginable glory of this consummation. The aspiration of the individuals who have been inspired by this vision must needs therefore be different from the aspiration of those who have been following the traditional spiritual urge. It must be an original, pioneer aspiration lit with a new meaning of creation. So those who take to sunlit path take to a kind of a new aspiration itself. It is not just the aspiration for the divine, but it is an aspiration for the descent of the divine. And it is not something that is full of pessimism, but it is something full of optimism. And like the ancients did, rejecting nature, rejecting life, is something alien, something too ignorant for the aspirant of the sunlit path. You see, why I'm telling you all these details is that when one comes to this path, if one does not have this kind of a substance in the call, we are bound to fall on the way. I mean, the first alarm, the first, you know, the glory of aspiration that comes towards the mother, it will dwindle if it is not supported by this substance of this kind of a mystic faith, this kind of a natural, automatic, innate urge for accepting life. And then he says, born of an assimilation of the highest spiritual aspirations of the past, this call embodies the time spirit of the present and heralds the great advent of which the seers have seen visions. And then, as you know, in the book, the mother, Sri Aurobindo, gives us a very important adjective here. He says, a fixed and unfailing aspiration that calls from below. So it's not just an aspiration that is there once in a while, when you are in trouble, when you have problems. It is a fixed and unfailing, that means something constant. And one important point that he mentions here, and I think that we should remember, that this Sri Aurobindo is speaking of this integral call, because it is the time spirit itself demands this integral call. Because you see, in the evolutionary pattern, we have seen many stages of spiritual evolution. But all the stages, more or less, except those of the Upanishads and the Gita, have been individualistic. Either they have been bhakti marga, or the jnana marga, or this marga, or that marga. But now, today, humanity's elite is prepared for invoking the divine in its integral manifestation. So also, when the time of descent of the divine in an integral manner comes, the call itself becomes an integral call. So that is why you see the link between that these are the two powers. Sri Aurobindo calls these two as powers. The call itself is a power to bring down the divine. In the ancient times, people had the call to bring the Brahman consciousness. So there was the marga of Raja Yoga. So there was the consciousness of identifying with Sri Krishna. So there was the marga of Bhakti Marga. But today the divine is coming, or has come, in his and her integral consciousness. So the humanity itself has to fall integrally. That is why he says there is a link between the earth's fall and the descent of the divine. If we analyze the human history of evolution, spiritual evolution, this is what has happened. And today, this is the moment that we must fall integrally. And then he says, as Mother herself clarifies here, that in order to sustain this kind of a fall, unfailing and constant, you need the support of five things. And I found this remarkable. Why our aspiration dwindles after the first jets of emotion? I'm sure all of us here have experienced this kind of the going up, and then after a time it flattens out. And for that, perhaps this is the hint. We need to be supported by five things. The first among them is sincerity. For if there is no sincerity, one cannot advance even by half a step. So that is the first, and it is always there. But it is possible to translate it by another word, if you prefer it, which would be transparency. There is the second, it is to have faith. Or another word which seems more limited, but it is much more important, because if your faith is not made up of a complete trust in the divine, well, you may have very easily remained under the impression that you have faith and yet be losing all trust in the divine power or divine consciousness. So the first is sincerity, second, faith and trust, and third, she would say, we need devotion. And I suppose the most important part of devotion, what we say bhakti, it is not the old type of devotion of doing a puja, going to your meditation room, going to the photograph, putting a garland and agarbatti. It is not that kind of a devotion. That is there, that is part of it. But she would lay greater emphasis on gratitude. A devotion devoid of gratitude is no devotion. So what sustains devotion in this integral yoga is constant gratitude to the divine. So she would say, the sense of gratitude that the divine exists, that feeling of a marvelous thankfulness which truly fills you with a sublime joy at the fact that the divine exists, that there is something in the universe which is the divine, that it is not just the monstrosity we see, that there is the divine exists. The heart is filled with so intense, so marvelous a joy, such a gratitude as of all things has a most delightful taste. So this is the most important ingredient of the devotion. Constantly be grateful to the mother. In fact, she tells a little humorously, that I keep receiving constantly letters saying, Mother, because of your grace, I have been able to pass this thing, I have been able to get this thing, I have been able to marry off my children, whatever it is. So people say, they express their gratitude to the mother for each of these things. Mother says, nobody has ever written to me that because of your grace, I haven't got this thing. So whenever we get a thing, we think it is the divine's grace. But if we don't get a thing, we think it is not the divine's grace. But there too is the divine's grace. We will see more of it in our next talk when we come to grace. But this is the constant gratitude for everything, good or bad. And then fourth, is of course aspiration. Aspiration goes with courage, because aspiration is a great adventure into the unknown. Then the last one, which most of the sadhaks would lack, is perseverance and endurance. Well, I've taken this very much in brief, just to give you an idea only, that when we have this inner call, this psychic call, it must be supported by these five psychological perfections that the mother calls. Without these, we can imagine our life, I mean, it becomes so very common, and we rush back into this commonality of day-to-day existence. Thus, the call required for the sunlight path is the psychic call. It cannot be anything but the psychic call, supported by these five elements that the mother has mentioned. And as Sri Aurobindo says, there are two paths, two ways of doing yoga. One by oneself, the other by the strength of the divine. And the sunlit path is nothing but that. And it begins with surrender and ends in integral identification with the divine.